This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A former North Carolina state trooper won a $3,750,000 verdict in a long-running whistleblower case last month. Former state trooper Reginald Newburn says he was fired in 2001 for breaking that unofficial law enforcement code of silence. Back in 2000, another officer told Newburn he heard his hand punching a teen who was running from police. That officer also said he intended to tell the supervisors a very different story. Newburn reported the incident to his supervisor but was hesitant to disclose all the details in an official report. He later amended that report to include the full story. A few months later, Newburn was fired. Reginald Newburn joins me now on The State of Things. Welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Can you take us back to that initial incident that I referred to in the introduction and kind of what happened that night?
Well, it was a simple DWI stop on the north side of Fayetteville. Upon talking to the teenager, he ran and subsequently got away. Three troopers got word that he was at a party close to where he had ran, went to that location, and he ran again. Well, they ran after him, caught him, beat him, handcuffed him, then beat him, placed him under arrest, and when I arrived on the scene, he was already arrested.
Did you see the beating?
No, I did not.
Why? How did you know they beat him with his handcuffs on?
Well, I found out after the fact because I saw the pictures. But listening to them talk after I arrived on the scene.
So they were all talking about it. They were the fact that they did it.
You can deduce that there had been some force.
So one of the officers had his hand was hurt. So tell us about that and then how this gets reported, this injured hand by one of the officers.
Well, I was standing with a group of troopers, and I noticed out of my peripheral that two other troopers were approaching the group. One of them was shaking his hand, asked them what happened. He said that I punched the subject and jammed my hand, and the other trooper pulled it back in place. I asked him if he was going to get it checked. He said, no, I'm just going to go home and put ice on it. And I said, well, you might want to get that checked because it could be broken. And then he said, well, I wouldn't know what to tell the sergeant. And then shortly after, he said, I can tell him that I fell and broke my hand. And that was pretty strange for me because I'm like, as an officer, there are times when you have to use force to effect an arrest. But when he said that, I just didn't want to be a part of it because I knew that they probably did something that they shouldn't have done. So I just left.
So what happens next? He files a report, and it doesn't include the fact that he...
Well, he goes and get his hand checked, and sure enough, it came back. It was broken. He does tell the sergeant that he fell and broke his hand. The three troopers involved stated that force was not used on the teenager. And so they didn't fill out a use of force report. They said no force was used. All the injuries that he received was self-inflicted, running into trees, bushes, so on and so forth.
So then what do you do now? What's your role in this? Are you obligated to file a report? You weren't first on the scene. You weren't part of the group that arrested him. Do you have to report?
Well, in hindsight, I can tell you what my role was. I didn't believe I was involved in the incident. The incident was over when I got there. I didn't want to be tied up in the incident. So when I figured out something was wrong, I left. Went and turned in my stuff. Well, several days later, the teenager's dad filed an excessive use of force complaint. on the three troopers involved in the arrest. And my supervisor was tasked to investigate, do a preliminary investigation on the incident. Well, I ran into him in the office, and he said, well, I saw that you was working the night of the incident. Were you there? And I said, I showed up after the fact. And he was like, well, I'm going to need a report. I'm going to need a statement from you. And I said, well, I wasn't there. And then he said, well, I'm still going to need a statement from you. So tying all this back together, I think what he was trying to do was trying to get as many statements as possible in order to discredit the young man, so to speak. So I told him that I would turn in a statement, and he told me to leave it in his box, put it in an envelope, leave it in his box for the next morning. Well, I got to thinking about it, and I just didn't want to get tied up with that group of rogue troopers. And so I didn't. And I called him the next morning at 10 o'clock and expressed my concerns about being asked to write a statement and on this incident. Because deep down I knew that it should have been a big issue, but evidently it wasn't to the highway patrol.
Well, let me talk about some of the tensions that you're feeling and the conflicts that you're going through in this moment. You said you didn't want to be involved with a group of rogue troopers. Did you know them by reputation, or do you mean in this case it's pretty clear these guys went beyond their bounds?
They had a reputation, but it was pretty clear that they had did something they shouldn't have done.
So that's one tension. You don't want to be part of that group. On the other hand, you had a sense
I was new to the district.
How long had you been a trooper?
I had been a trooper about 11 years, 10 and a half years. But I was new in that particular district. I had been there probably about 6 months.
And so what difference does that make? Why wouldn't you want to make a report if you were new to that district?
Not that I wouldn't want to make a report, but I'm sure that incident wouldn't have happened in Pitt County, in Greenville, where I was stationed for 9 years. Maybe that was the culture of Fayetteville. I hadn't been there long enough to understand that, hey, when somebody run, they beat them. I don't know, but I didn't want to get involved. I didn't want to be tied into that group.
So on the one hand, you don't want to be part of this group that seems to be a law unto itself. On the other hand, you've got a conscience yourself, and you say, well, I overheard these guys. I know what they were talking about. Why not just go ahead and file that report?
And I did. I wrote a statement. I didn't write in what I had heard. I wrote in what I had did and what I saw. Mm-hmm. And the trooper had hurt his hand. And maybe a little naive on my part, but I thought that the Highway Patrol was an honorable organization, and it was obvious that force was used. Mm-hmm. A third grader could have told you that force was used, whether it was excessive force, that could be left to interpretation, but it was obvious that force was used. So, I thought it was enough. My statement was enough as far as that the Highway Patrol was going to do a thorough investigation and determine that these other troopers were lying, so on and so forth. Well, as the days went by, I just didn't get that feeling that they were going to do what was right. So I went and spoke with the sergeant. And and he said, man, just do what you think is right. And so I ran into the sergeant, my first sergeant, and I told him that there was more to this incident than what had been reported. They asked me to write a different, asked me to write another statement. I amended my statement. My statement said the exact same thing. The only thing that was added was that that he hit the subject, that force was used. And almost immediately that day, I heard that they were going to go after me within an hour of turning in my report.
What happened?
They did exactly that. They, my first sergeant sent up a charge sheet to internal affairs, and they started an investigation on me.
And what did they charge you with?
Violation of the untruthfulness policy.
So they said you were not telling the truth.
That's correct.
What happened next?
They did a thorough investigation on me. A not-so-thorough investigation on the three officers. They said that it was inconclusive as to whether force was used, cleared the three officers involved, and I was fired for a violation of the Highway Patrol's truthfulness policy.
Did you file any lawsuit? What did you do then when you got fired?
I went through the state's appeal process, and they upheld the firing.
Yeah. But you said you thought you were being fired because you were blowing the whistle?
Oh, I knew it was being fired.
But, I mean, that was the claim you made. That was what they were looking at when they dismissed the claim.
I think initially when I went through the process, I said that it was an unjust fire and I didn't retaliate. I didn't file a whistleblower claim. I was just saying that it was unjust. It was unjust firing, and but turned out to be that it was a whistleblower case.
And it took a long time. There were two lower courts when you finally did file suit that dismissed the case in the lower court. It wasn't until it got to the North Carolina Supreme Court that they recognized that indeed this was a whistleblower case and could go forward. Am I right?
You are right.
And that took a long time. So how many years? Because this happened, 16 years ago?
About 16 years ago. The incident started in 2000, and it worked its way through the court system. Like I said, I went to the North Carolina Court of Appeals twice, to North Carolina Supreme Court once. And after going to the North Carolina Supreme Court, it still took 5-6 years.
Meanwhile, you're without a job. What did you do next after you got fired?
No, I had a job. I worked as the state capitol police. I was lucky enough to get a job. It was police. I had police powers, but it was more like security.
You said you had a hard time finding a job with other police agencies with that on your record, right?
I had a very, very hard time trying to find a job. Where I was at, it was a job, but I wasn't happy. I was bored. There was no room to grow. It was just a stagnant position.
At one point, you had a supervisor who was one of the commanding officers in that unit that you were in with the state troopers, right?
He was captain on the Highway Patrol, and he served under the colonel that fired me. Yes,
and then ended up with you on the Capitol Police. Is that right? So how did he treat you?
He was, in my opinion, he wasn't fair. He was biased. In my opinion, he was trying to fire me.
So as we say, the courts have now confirmed your position. You won a $3.75 million lawsuit for being unlawfully fired because you blew the whistle on these officers. Who have they ever been brought? Has their case ever been brought to justice, or have they?
No, they were cleared.
They were cleared, and that's over. Let's talk about this bigger question because, of course, now with all of these questions about policing in our streets and the use of force— You know, the question is whether or not police can do the right thing when they see that a minority of officers in their department is doing the wrong thing. They just can't open their mouths and they just can't get it done. Tell us more about that culture.
There is a culture. of if you tell on another officer, chances are you're going to get fired. And therein lies the problem. And it's where management has to do the right thing. Because there are a lot of good officers out there. There's a lot of good officers that want to do the right thing, but they don't want to end up like me, without a job, without a career, fighting for something that they shouldn't have to fight for. In my opinion, I think agencies would want an officer to tell the truth and not treat them like an outsider.
Well, why do you think that is? I mean, as you say, anybody would just want to get rid of the bad apples if that's really all it is. It becomes a culture when everybody in the department covers up top to bottom. That's when it's a culture. Mm-hmm. The bad apples argument is only true if you get rid of the bad apples. And if you let them stay and they never get prosecuted and they never get convicted, then it's a cultural problem. And it's your fault for not getting rid of the bad apples. But why not? Why do you think that's true, that a department wouldn't want to get rid of these guys to get them off our reputation, to wrecking our reputation, these guys?
Because it makes the agency look bad. Anytime there was a saying on the Highway Patrol, if it makes the officer look bad, they'll get rid of you. But if it makes the agency look bad, they're going to wrap your arms mm-hmm. around you and try to protect you. And that's what I experienced on the Highway Patrol. It's backwards. It seems like to me that if you got an officer doing the right thing, you should wrap your arms around that officer. The agency is big enough, they're going to survive whatever conflict comes out of the agency is big enough to survive, but the officer and a lot of times are not big enough to survive.
Well, let's take it from the other side. Let's take a look at a group of men and women who feel they're under siege. They've got dangerous work. There's people making claims about them all the time. In many cases, not true. And they're always hearing this stuff. And nobody understands how hard it is but you. And everybody else sitting out there yakking on the radio has no sense of what they're going through. Is that a reason to tighten up and say, look, we've got to take care of ourselves because nobody else is going to look out for us?
There are issues with some folks doing things they shouldn't have. But there are a lot of issues where police are doing things they shouldn't do. In that incident in Greensboro, that was a 5-minute call. Okay. It was a simple find out if the subject belonged there.
You're talking about a man now who has left the force because of his excessive use of force mm-hmm. in Greensboro, and he stayed 15 minutes, and his partner figured out it was done in five.
Yeah, it's... There needs to be changes on both sides. But at the same time, there's that inherent trust issue with law enforcement and the public, certain members of the public. And the reason it's there is because there's no transparency in agency. We just spoke about it as far as officers. If the people in high enough positions do their job, it makes everybody's job easier because people want to trust the police, but you really can't because every day there's something coming up that tells you.
What about body cams? I've only got about 30 seconds left, but should we make it easier? Should this stuff be released to the public with proper deductions for protecting privacy? Should it be easier for us to see what's going on?
I think so. I never had a problem with a camera. I think a camera helps you more than it hurts you.
I want to thank you so much. Reginald Newburn, former North Carolina state trooper, recently awarded a $3.75 million verdict under North Carolina's Whistleblower Act. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, we're going to chat with two jazz musicians who shaped the music scene in North Carolina. Nina Freelon and Scott Sawyer will be with us. Stay tuned.